Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, and my good pal Tina Noel, our producer, is here. Chef Terry, once again, not only did he go on vacation for his son's wedding in Hawaii and miss the show, but now he is on vacation again.
Slacking
I don't even
off.
Know where. Do you know where he went?
He's just slacking off. He's just laying out in the sun. It's August. It's beautiful. He's playing in his garden. He's probably cultivating some delicious meals.
He knows the hydroplane races are over, doesn't he? Yeah. Yeah, Chef Terry is on vacation, and so we will be going, not solo, Tina's going to jump in. Brittany Bartleven, the pastry chef from the Dolly Bakery, is going to join for the second hour. We have a volunteer, Jim, from the audience, who's going to come up for a segment. We've never had an audience member be a guest host before, so that's going to be a fun little change for us.
Yeah, you know, that's the beauty of coming to the Hot Stove Society and being an audience member. You never know, and we're just going to pluck you from your seat and put you behind a microphone.
Exactly. It'd be good fun. And if I was Jim, I would pick something out from the gift shop under $50 as pay for the day.
If I were Jim, I'd pick something over $50.
Anyway, I'm Tom Douglas. I own several Seattle restaurants here in downtown Seattle. I also own this cooking school that we do our show from every week, the Hot Stove Society. We have a good time here. Chef Janet's in the back keeping things happening back there, and she might even join us later for a segment. Who knows? Who knows? It's a big day at the Hot Stove Society and on the Seattle Kitchen Show. Today, our show includes, like I said, Chef Brittany Bartleben. We're going to talk about a dessert that people have asked me for the recipe for 30 years. It was on our menu 30 years ago. It made it to our first cookbook, the Tom Douglas Seattle Kitchen book, and our second book, actually. A little bit changed the recipe, but our Dolly Bakery book. But it's called a pear tart, and it's a poached pear tart on puff pastry, and Chef Brittany is going to go through it top to bottom, including the caramel sauce, which everyone should know how to make their own caramel sauce. There is no reason, in my opinion, to buy store-bought caramel sauce, because by the time you get it out of the jar, into a pan, heat it up, and then pour it over, you could make it from scratch. It's so fast. So awesome. good thing to listen for later in the show.
Now's the time to grab a pen and paper and get ready for that segment, because
yeah.
You're going to want to take some notes.
Yes. And then we're going to make a brown Betty. You know what a brown Betty is?
Nope.
Well, we're going to teach
sure
you.
Sure don't.
You know, there's buckles and Bettys and crisp and crumbs and all sorts of pies.
Betty?
So a Betty, we're going to find out later in the show what a brown Betty is.
All right.
I just drove back from my farm in eastern Washington, Prosser, Washington. And I started seeing the first semi-loads of apples going. So there's a big, you know, the crush, not the wine grape crush, but the crush of trucking over there. I followed three semi-trailers full of carrots.
Wow.
I followed four trailers full of onions. The apples, trailer after trailer after trailer of apples. They're not picking any grapes yet, and they're not cutting down the hops yet. Mm-hmm. But the harvest is in full swing over there. We know we've already gotten the cherries. Peaches are going. Apricots are done. Blueberries are happening. Corn is big right now. So there's just, it's alive over there with
the
agriculture.
Yeah,
the
bounty's on, for sure.
And then we're going to discuss, of course, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Kitchen Hacks, or as Leslie Kelly likes to call them, shortcuts.
Kitchen shortcuts. Things will help you in your home kitchen. Things that you have learned along the road.
And tomatoes. I made, or I didn't make it, but Sarah, our farmer, made a beautiful tomato tart. And so we're going to talk about different ideas of how you can use tomatoes, because like zucchini, they're coming on in full swing, especially with this heat.
Yeah, it's a good year for them, for sure.
We have 3,500 pepper plants that are full of peppers, but they're all green. And at the farm, in the next 3 days, it's supposed to be over 100 degrees, and we think we're going to have a lot of peppers, ripe peppers, very quickly. First, let's do ordinary to extraordinary. If
yes.
We still have time. I kind of got verbose there.
Tom, this is a fun game we like to play here at Seattle Kitchen, whereby I will give you a regular, ordinary dish, and you're just going to add some pizzazz to it, some chefy goodness. Your first dish today is coleslaw. Summertime, people are making coleslaw on those picnics.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do to that to make it, not awful? Because I don't like coleslaw.
You don't like coleslaw.
No.
You're a veg head, and you have to like all things vegetables. You have to learn that.
Yeah, you know,
can't be. Well, you've already been selective down. You don't do dairy.
No,
you know,
dairy.
So
no,
you
meat.
Have to start recognizing that you're limiting your.
It's a true story. So, So help me out here with my coleslaw.
Well, it's cabbage,
I find it
right?
To be not very exciting. I like it when it has a little bit of vinegar, a more vinegary punch to it. That's I can get behind that kind of a coleslaw.
So my grandma's coleslaw was the fine chopped cabbage, a little bit of onion, and then it was apple cider vinegar, black pepper, sugar, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. It was so a sweet and sour kind of coleslaw dressing. I think many people think you have to use a mayonnaise base, and you really don't.
Yes, that's the so. So cut the mayonnaise. That's going to make it already extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah, apple cider vinegar, black pepper, and sugar. And you want the sugar and vinegar to balance each other out into kind of a classic sweet and sour. So that was just minced cabbage. I had one last night at the Brave Horse Tavern, which I happen to own. It was delicious, but it was shredded cabbage, shredded kale, shredded carrots. And then it had a mayonnaise base, but light, because the mayonnaise was cut with lemon juice. Mm. So it did have a tart quality about it. And I loved it because it had kind of an Old Bay seasoning, like, which is very heavy on celery seed.
Yeah,
and I
love
that celery seed flavor in coleslaw for some reason. I can't figure it out. But yeah. I grew up with it, I think, is more why that is. So that's how I would go about two different slaws. And that slaw base can be anything from shredded broccoli, shredded kohlrabi, you name it. You can make a slaw out of anything.
All righty. Your next dish right up my alley is a margarita.
Oh, it's a dish,
it's not a dish. Unless you're at my house.
It's a dish, is it?
If you're at my house, you might have a margarita on a Sunday for, say, breakfast.
Well, you know at the Cantina Lena we have margarita slushies. Mm. And yesterday at the farm, we picked our first watermelons and our first Hannah's Choice musk melons or cantaloupes. And to just take a puree of that fruit, a puree of cantaloupe, and just make a regular margarita and add a shot of cantaloupe juice or a shot of fresh watermelon juice to it. It's the best. I just love that. And for me, straight up margaritas aren't my jam. They're a little too acidic, a little too limey.
Yeah.
But when you add that fruit juice to it, it sweetens it up a little bit and adds a little not aromatic. Well, the muskmelons are very aromatic, but just a different kind of quality to it. Broadens the flavor base a little bit. So that would be my choice. And if you want, you just take some cubes of that melon, put them in the freezer, and then garnish your margarita with frozen chunks of cantaloupe.
That is one extraordinary margarita. Mm-hmm. Delicious.
All right, there you go. There's a great margarita. I'll be at your house to enjoy what I just taught you how to make soon. As soon as the invite comes. Up next, we're going to talk about the abundance in our state and what's going on in the garden on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. Everyone's getting to order their breakfast sandwich right now. I'm Tom Douglas. Tina Knoll, our producer's joining me on the mic today as Chef Terry is on vacation. And Abigail, our intern, is going to jump in here real quick because you know, it's the season of abundance in our state. And if you're a home gardener, you're likely swimming in blackberries, tomatoes, and the all-important zucchini.
I mean, important.
Now, last week I happened to say something about zucchini.
You do.
And mostly I said it about summer squash, those little crook-neck summer squash, which I don't personally care for. Zucchini I can live with, but it's like tofu. It just takes on whatever flavor you add to it.
It's a vehicle.
Well, apparently people disagree with me.
Yeah, that happens a lot, Tom. I just want you to know on social media.
Well, I asked the question to the audience, do people just listen to disagree with me?
I mean,
or do they listen because if they find it interesting that I hate so many things?
I think both. These are not mutually exclusive issues here.
Okay, Abigail, our intern, you said our Facebook page was a little bit active after my zucchini or summer squash comment.
So there's a little bit of drama on our Facebook page, as usual. So we put a poll up about zucchini to see how people felt about it, and it was a resounding victory for the zucchini fans.
How many? It's like 5-4?
Out of 109.
109?
Out of 109 voters, 86 said that they loved zucchini, and 23 said that they did not. So I'm sorry.
Now, I'll just say I feel a little maligned because I didn't go as hard on zucchini as I did on summer squash, like the crookneck summer squash.
I mean, what's the true difference?
I did not put summer squash.
Okay.
Chef Tom Douglas, what is the true difference between flavor and interestingness of these two things? Because as far as I'm concerned, zucchini and the summer squash are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, I just don't like the little knobby skin on the summer squash, the little crook neck.
But that's the issue.
It's pretty when you cook it so much.
Okay.
People still had pretty strong feelings about zucchini.
Okay, so tell me what they said. Tell me why I'm an idiot.
One person agrees with you. Judy said, we said what, how would you react if people brought zucchini to the table? Mm-hmm. And Judy said, if I am dying, maybe she would eat it.
So she agrees with me.
Yes.
Yes. And so people, somebody's so mean, they're going to give her zucchini on her deathbed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Her people, last meal.
People were giving us a lot of cool ideas, though. Lori Allen has a KitchenAid attachment that makes her zucchini into sheets,
uh-huh.
and she uses it for lasagna and enchiladas, which I thought was an interesting idea.
Yeah, especially, I guess, if you're vegan, if you can't do flour.
Vegetarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people say put butter on it.
Well, that'll make anything delicious, that's for sure. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can put it on my hand, and my hand would taste good. So.
It wouldn't be vegetarian, though.
That's true. And so that was it. It was pretty much a blowout for zucchini over Tom.
I'm sorry. People really love zucchini, it turns out.
Turns out.
There you go.
Okay. Once again, I'm a loser, and that's okay. So, tomatoes. Let's talk about the abundance of tomatoes. And I'm not sure on the west side of the state if they're abundant yet like they are on the east side of the state.
Well, you know, I included this a little bit in the show today because I was at my mother's garden in Tacoma, Washington, and she's got this lovely container gardens, and her tomatoes are popping everywhere.
Okay,
all kinds.
So
three different kinds. Mm-hmm. They're just everywhere. So I brought a bunch home, and and as I looked around the interwebs, people are going crazy all over.
They're harvesting.
So, yeah, they are harvesting.
Good. Well, we've had a nice run of sun, so that's helpful, too.
Yeah, yeah. Probably in the next week or two, you're really going to get them.
Yeah, I was telling you earlier that in our 3,500 pepper plants, we've had all these pepper sets, and they're beautiful, and they're big, and they're luscious, but they're still green. Like, all the banana peppers haven't turned yellow yet. So we are expecting 3 days of over 100 degrees, and we think we're going to end up with a mountain of ripe peppers all at the same time.
So. You know, it'd be fun to put like a time-lapse camera on those because over a couple of days, they just go nuts.
Yeah.
Fun to see.
So tomatoes, how do you use them? What's kind of an interesting way? One of the things that we did at the farm this weekend was we took a sheet of commercial puff paste, so right out of the freezer department at your grocery store, and some stores like Shoreline Central or Met Market, some have a really nice product. If you look at the ingredients, it'll just say butter, flour, and won't have a lot of preservatives in it, right? So so a nice puff pastry, and then you simply let it thaw but not get warm. Thaw so that you can spread it out on a cookie sheet. And now I slice the tomatoes, and I dry them just a little bit because when they're too soupy, your puff pastry won't rise.
Okay.
So just slice the tomatoes, dry them off on a little bit of a paper towel, or if you can save that juice, it's just great tomato juice, right? So, but then you're going to layer them right on top of your puff pastry, leave about a half inch around the edge so that the outside of your puff can rise, because the inside's not going to rise as much because with the wet tomatoes on top. And then some slivers of red onion, some fresh herbs, and lots of black pepper and salt, and just pop it in the oven. Finish it all the way to at a temperature that you have a nice brown crust, and that the crust, just take a peek with a spatula and take a peek at the bottom crust under the center. Make sure that's nice and brown also. You don't want a raw center. Pull it out, and while it's still warm, put a scoops of fresh ricotta on top and maybe scoops of fresh basil pesto on top.
And when taking a quick step back, when you are putting your fresh herbs, which are you choosing? Which fresh herbs are you choosing?
This one, I have a basil pesto, so I might choose tarragon if I want multiple herbs. Any soft herb like that you can eat raw. But the warmth of the tart will bring out the aroma of those herbs. You don't want to cook them. Unless you're using dried herbs, you don't really want to cook the fresh herbs. That's why I'm dousing with the pesto at the end after it's out of the oven. So that is a beautiful way. I mean, it's sort of like a caprese salad, but on a crust.
Yeah.
And it's really, really a delicious thing to do with tomatoes.
You know, when I was in Spain, almost every restaurant.
When I was in Spain.
just like to throw that out every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Spain, though, one of the things that I loved was almost every restaurant had this just like crushed tomato on bread, but it didn't make the bread soggy. I don't know how they did it, but it was a very fresh, delicious tomato on there.
Yeah, I want to say it's called pan en tomquet or something like that. And it is literally toasted baguette. And it's literally, you rub garlic over it, a whole clove of garlic. So on that hard, crusty edge, I like it pretty crusty.
Yeah.
And I love it toasted over a wood fire. But you rub the garlic over top of that, so it's got a raw garlic essence to it, but not chunks of garlic. You literally have to scrape the garlic against the toasty edge, and then you do the same with fresh tomatoes. Mm. You just cut a tomato in half and rub it over the bread. And that's the tomato toast, and it's on every Spanish menu,
especially
any tapas bar. So.
Yep. I'm surprised I don't see it here more, but it is quite delicious.
Well, you really have to wait for tomato season. That's the big thing. Not everyone does wait, right? They'll buy bad tomatoes and try and do the same thing, but it's best when you've got a great, ripe, even still warm tomato off the vine.
And I know we don't have a lot of time left. Which type of tomato are you, as you're choosing all the varietals?
Uh-huh.
Any in particular that you're going for, especially on your on the pie that you made?
You want to use a tomato like the ones you see over there in Spain are Roma style tomatoes, like a plum tomato. But right now, anything that's ripe, you could rub against there. It would be a bit of a shame to take one of your big beef steaks that you would slice for a BLT or something like that and kind of crush it onto it. But it's certainly doable. It doesn't really matter. As long as it has good flavor. Sean's telling me to wrap it up. Coming up next, we've got kitchen hacks or shortcuts or thoughts on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, and Tina Null, our producer, is on one mic. And we've invited Jim Maurer, one of our audience members who's been here before, up to the mic to kind of help me through this segment because Chef Terry is on vacation, left me going solo.
Yep.
And I'm sure I'm already sick of hearing my voice. You must be, too.
Totally sick of it. No, not sick of it at all. But it is fun to grab somebody from the audience who
we've never done that
is a home cook. Yeah. And, yeah, we've never done it before. It's super fun.
So, Jim, what is your qualification to be here today? Why do you like to come to the radio show?
Well, I love the show.
Good.
I love Terry. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But and you too.
Can you do the fake French accent like he does?
But of course.
Oh, but of course. well, good. So you just love to cook, and you live in Bellevue.
Yeah, I live in Bellevue. One of my cooking buddies is here in the audience. Frank, he's waving.
Nice. Hey. And do you have a garden?
A small garden, mostly herbs.
Mostly herbs, like a pot garden, like a deck garden kind of.
It's along the driveway, a little box.
Nice. Good. All right. Well, you know what this story is here. Tina's going to ask us some questions that she's looked up and has found answers to, but we're going to agree or disagree on whether, or we might even add another thought to it. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
All right.
All right. So I read a little bit about keeping your potatoes white. They say cover shredded or diced potatoes with cold water before you're cooking them. This will prevent that grayish brown color from happening. Mm-hmm. Have you tried this? Does it work?
It does work. I do it all the time. So as I peel them, I just dump them in the water. And
cold water.
Let them set. Yeah.
So here's the thing about that, though. I don't know that it's necessary. One is you're washing the starch off of it, right? So you'll see once you pull those potatoes back out of your cold water that it'll be a little layer of starch on the bottom. So it depends if you want that potato starch or not, if it's important in your dish. But if you just take fresh shredded potatoes and or grated potatoes and put them into a pan, like, say, making hash brown or a roasty or something like that. That gray, kind of like in apples when you make applesauce, it turns brown, right? Or the potatoes turn brown. So it's not a big deal if it turns gray. It doesn't change the flavor at all. It's really just an eye issue.
It's not very appealing for mashed potatoes.
Yeah, however. That's for sure.
Super unappealing. Okay. This is also on the food storage front. This is about avoiding plastic wrap disasters, which I have all the time. They say store the roll in the fridge. Store your plastic wrap in the refrigerator to store your leftovers with less of a hassle because as you chill it, it makes the wrap easier to transport off the roll and into your bowl. Anybody try that one?
Never tried it.
Kitchen hack.
Either have I.
I'm going to do that.
That sounds great.
You learn something new.
I always pull it off the roll and it gets all messed up.
The problem for me is my roll is 3,000 feet long. It's about 15 pounds, and it is 2 feet wide, 20 inches wide or so. So,
but I would question whether it would stick to the bowl if it doesn't stick to itself.
But it's so thin, it's going to come up to room temp pretty quick.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm going to try it.
I'm going to try it, too. All right, here's one about ginger. They say peel that papery skin from the ginger, always difficult. They're saying don't use a peeler. Use a spoon to peel out the finicky ginger root.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All the time. Plus, you can get into the little crevices easily, too.
So it does two things, right? You're absolutely right. It gets into the crevices, but with a peeler, you tend to peel those crevices off, and you lose all that fresh ginger. And then a lot of times, if you're making something that needs to be strained, you don't need to peel it at all. You just strain out the kind of hairy bits and the skin, and the juice comes through, and you save yourself two troubles.
Wow. So they also say ditch the peeler when you're de-skinning your potatoes. They say snap it by boiling it and then putting it in an ice bath.
Mm-hmm. And the peeler just kind of...
And it kind of flakes
like
off?
With a beet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of thing where you roast a beet.
You tried that one? So no peeler for potatoes either?
I've not tried that
one. Is there any use for a peeler anymore?
Not unless you're in a car and you're peeling out.
Parmesan cheese.
Yeah.
I'm feeling sorry for the peeler.
Parmesan cheese. That's a good hack right there, right? Big curls of Parmesan cheese on your salad. Looks very beautiful.
Ah, there you go. You are a home
or
chef.
Or white chocolate for your coconut cream pie.
Oh.
Knock it off. All right, here's one about peeling citrus fruits without the mess. They say to avoid the mess and frustration, roll citrus fruits or microwave them for just a minute for easy peeling. Microwave your...
So
that seems wrong.
I don't quite get this one. It's just because I don't understand where we're going. Are we trying to get to Supremes, do you think? So they take the whole peel off, or are they talking about taking the zest off? Because it's not messy.
You decide.
Yeah. I just think that it's one of those hacks that is more trouble than it's worth.
Mm-hmm. It makes it more juicy. I've heard of doing that to get the juice out, but never the peel. Yeah.
The rolling of it.
Or
yeah,
even
absolutely.
The microwave. I don't do it, but it will make it juicier.
Just for a minute in the microwave, and then it kind of softens it up?
Yeah.
Not even that long.
Think of all the vitamin C you just killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Right. Any kitchen hacks that you have come across? I'm putting you on the spot a bit here, Jim, but anything that you do in the kitchen that you're like, oh, that's clever. No one does that.
Well, I noticed on here that an easy way to peel garlic was to hit it with a chef's knife first, which I agree, but I take it one step farther. If you use a sharp knife, when you cut the little edge off, the peel just follow the knife right off. So hack it, you know, hit it with the knife and then slice the end off and the peel comes right off.
I have one and I use it, but I also see it in here. One of the great disasters of the restaurant business is the use of PVC film, that little plastic wrap.
Uh-huh.
I mean, mountains. In the restaurant business, you see it everywhere in our world, wrapping pallets, you know, to keep all the cases in line. But in the kitchen, we use so much plastic wrap, it makes me crazy. So a little easy thing to do is to buy a shower caps that you would normally put on your head in a shower, and you use those instead of plastic wrap.
And then you can reuse
them. And you can reuse them. Just pop them right in the dishwasher. Anything you want to do with them, you can just rinse them and dry them. But, yeah, shower caps are an amazing thing on all your Pyrex bowls and your stainless steel bowls, and it's a wonderful kitchen hack that actually helps save the environment.
I love that. You know, on that same topic, at the grocery store, when you get your produce and stuff, do you use individual plastic bags, or do you just put your produce, like, right and, like, not worry about it getting gross, put it in your cart or however, and not worry about the plastic bag? Sometimes I do it, and then sometimes I'm like,
it depends.
Too many hands, it's going to get gross.
Yeah, it depends. Like in the mushroom section, I always use the paper bags because I think of paper as being a renewable resource.
Mm-hmm.
In lemons, limes, grapefruits, melons, I never use a bag at all. And then with English peas or anything small, you kind of have to use some sort of bag.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer paper over plastic.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I look at it.
I'll bring you a new book.
I have these little mesh bags that you can buy at the store. So I just carry them and put my... vegetables in those.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, you don't have to bag most of the things.
Yeah.
If I have three avocados, I just put them on the counter.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so to soften butter, going back to our kitchen hacks, this is about butter. Now, A, do you keep butter out in a little dish on the counter just so it's always soft? Or they're saying just stick it out for an hour if you're on a tight schedule to soften that butter. Pop it in the microwave. What do you do? What are you doing with your butter, Jim?
I like to refrigerate it because I don't use salted butter, and the salt is what kind of keeps it long, but my wife leaves it down on the counter all the time. So we kind of have two different butters that we use.
Well, the trick there, Jim, is you have to eat more butter because 2 or 3 days on the counter is not going to kill it, but after that it starts to get kind of a cheesy kind of aftertaste to it.
True.
But you know, this is Seattle. A lot of us, including me, don't have air conditioning, and I have full western exposure at my house. And so I came home from the farm, and I had a pool of butter that I forgot to put in the fridge, a pool of butter on my kitchen counter that had melted. So, yeah, you have to think about it. But mm-hmm. an hour out of the fridge is to temper is pretty reasonable.
All right. That's one of my favorite segments, the kitchen hack. So we'll do more of that in upcoming shows.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that those little tips and tricks are helpful for the home cook in a big way. Let's get more PVC out of our system.
Yes.
Polyvinyl chloride. It can't be good for you.
No.
Listen to that name. All right, up next, it's time for questions from you, our faithful listeners, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Thank you, Jim. That was awesome.
Yeah, great job,
Thank
Jim.
You.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas. Our audience is just waiting for their breakfast. We're excited that the order has been placed. We're just waiting on the Dahlia Bakery to fulfill the order. And then Abigail is going to run over and bring back the bounty that is the breakfast sandwich in Seattle. The best breakfast
sandwich.
That's
what you get if you're an audience member here.
I'll be
super
curious.
Fun.
If you guys ever try it, if you don't think that's the best breakfast sandwich in Seattle, I would be surprised.
It is the best. Hands down, it's the best.
Our own homemade English muffins, crispy toasted, home-cured ham, our own mustard.
Amazing.
Oh, amazing.
If you are listening to the show right now and you want to come and be a part of it, head to hotstovesociety.com and get your ticket right now.
It's only $20 and it comes with a sandwich and coffee. Who offers a better
value?
And
you got to plan it ahead because they sell out.
All right. We have questions from you, our listeners. If you'd like to question why we keep talking about the Dahlia Bakery sandwich, that's fine too. But anyway, no.
Yep. These all come from our Facebook page, which is very active. Often people want to know, you know, all kinds of things about cooking, and they've got questions. You've got the answers. Colleen Nicolette has your first question. She asks, best pizza sauce, and do you cook it before or not?
Best pizza sauce,
yeah,
do you cook it before or not?
Mm-hmm.
So, two schools of thought here, I would say. One is, you pick your favorite canned tomato, right? And then you take that canned tomato, and I do a cutting,
do you have a favorite canned tomato?
We did that cutting here for our tasting panel, and I don't remember off the top of my head which one won. But I use a lot of Chris Bianco's tomatoes. It says Bianco, B-I-A-N-C-O, Bianco tomatoes. And he's a famous chef in Phoenix and has he's kind of started the high-end pizza revolution around this country. But he has a canned tomato product that I think is delicious, so that's the one I tend to use. And I go in and I'll take the whole canned tomato and I'll take my immersion blender, and I'll just pop it right into the can and kind of puree them up, and then... Or you can just throw them into a pan and do the same thing. I cook them just a little bit, but not much. And I like them. I like them when they are packed in sauce, not juice. And so that you have a nice ready-to-go tomato sauce with a little bit of chunk, rather than just sauce.
Now, is this what you use at Serious Pie? Because I have to tell you, it is my favorite thing.
I'm not telling you.
I knew it. It is my favorite thing. All right, so that's a good tip.
Yeah. So you can do that, or you can just do fresh tomatoes. Fresh tomatoes, you really have to strain. They're just too wet, in my mind, for a fresh pizza. It makes it watery. You literally will pour off water as you pick up your slice. I just don't like it. So the only way to avoid that is to use underripe tomatoes, which is what's on most pizzas in America, sadly.
Yeah. All right, are you ready for your next one?
Yes.
Emily Sakuma is asking, ideas for using my Korean stone pot besides making, the typical thing I can't pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
Bibimbap.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right either, but that's how I call it.
You got bibimbap. Audience? Is that consensus? Bibimbap? Bibimbap. Bibimbap.
Three Bs. Pronounce them separately. Bibimbap.
Bibimbap.
There you go. You got it. Totally Tina has arrived.
All right. Anyway, what's your advice?
I don't know if you weren't listening. The audience on the terrestrial radio couldn't hear us during the break, but we learned all about Tina's first career of being Totally Tina on Radio Disney.
That's right.
Out of Dallas, Texas. So that's what that was referring
right.
to. Those stone pots, I love them. And typically the bibimbap, the part that gets caramelized onto the stone pot is the rice below, right?
And can you go back just one step and explain what is that for those people who don't know? What's the bibimbap?
What's a stone pot?
What's a bibimbap?
Bibimbap is typically it's a stone, literally a stone pot that they put onto a burner and get it burning hot, right? And then they'll put in their rice. And I say they, and I'm being general. I make it myself, so they is me, they is whoever wants to try this process. You put in your rice, and you start to garnish with things. I've had it with sautéed mushrooms or rehydrated dried mushrooms, a little bit of spinach, some bean sprouts, some bulgogi, which is shaved beef, sesame seeds, maybe a fried egg on top, and then you kind of stir it all together with the what's the Korean barbecue sauce? Gauguchong?
Yes.
I know that's not it. I know that's not it, but that's something like that. Anyway, I squirt that over the top, and then you let the rice sit in that pot, and then it creates a nice toasty caramelized bottom, and you kind of have to scrape it off the stone pot. Mm. And that is why it's so awesome, and that's why people love it. So the stone pot can be worked into other menu items. For example, again, I just made this really delicious thing. I sound like Terry all of a sudden because everything he makes is somehow delicious.
Yeah. That's well, add some harissa and exactly. Mustard in your...
I do have more mess-ups, I think, than Terry does. But I made a corn pudding. So I just did a cream corn, and I added a little masa to it to thicken it. So now I've got corn flour in my cream corn, so it starts to thicken up. And then I put an egg in there. I stir an egg in and some pepper jack cheese. Mm. So made a corn pudding. Now pour that into your hot stone pot, and that'll crust literally almost blacken the edge, which is fine. You'll be surprised at how sweet the corn gets when it sits on the stone pot. And let it get brown. Mm. And just pop it into the oven so that your egg rises into the center, but you also have then the nice crust. And you can do this in a stone pot. You can do that in a cast iron pan. Which is what I happen to do it in, but it would work just the same. So lots of uses for that hot caramelized pot. Mm-hmm. Take your chicken wings, right? Your fish sauce chicken wings. Get your stone pot super hot. Finish your wings. Pour it into it. It's like a sizzle platter, right? So you just pour it in, and then it caramelizes against the stone and comes out sizzling and hot. And it's super sexy, I think, to come to the table with a sizzling platter.
Yeah. Fun. Okay, we have time for one more. Cher Bird Garfield. She's a big fan of the show. She says, what do you think about not grilling burgers as some chefs advise? They say to cook them on a solid surface grill, you don't lose the fat and the flavor.
Well, she's right.
What's your take on
that? Two different styles. We do both in our restaurants. Like Palace Kitchen has a flame wood-fired burger.
What do you do at the Brave Horse Tavern? Because when I did eat meat, that was my favorite burger in town.
I got to say, the Brave Horse Tavern burger is eating beautifully right now. That's on a griddle. And so one of the nice things about a griddle is the fat doesn't go away. And so it almost deep fries the outside edge and gives you a little more crunchy outside to your burger so that when you bite through it. Remember what I said a few weeks ago about Dick's? Like, if there's no line at Dick's, I don't go to Dick's. If there's a big line, I go to Dick's because I know I'm going to get that nice crunch on a fresh burger. But if the burger's been sitting there for a while, it softens up, and I don't get the same mouthfeel experience. Mm. Same thing with the Brave Horse Tavern. If you get it right off that griddle, which we make them to order, they have a nice crunchy edge to them, and then the soft interior of the burger. Mm. And then simply just put a nice melty cheese on top. Like we sometimes take the Beecher's Flagship and mix it 75% Flagship, 25% butter, and it makes it a more, and we put it into the mixture and just beat it together. And then it really melts beautifully over top of your burger. And then also the Brave Horse, my favorite thing, we make our own cucumber chip pickles. And they are delicious. I got to say, Bradley, Chef Bradley makes them, and they are really good, and it's worth the effort. Onions and cucumbers in like a sweet brine.
Ooh.
So good. He's a Southern dude. He comes up with a lot of this good stuff. Up next, Brittany Bartleben joins us. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Thanks for hanging through that long break. We appreciate it. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. My name is Chef Tom Douglas, actually. That's my first name on my birth certificate.
Chef.
I've been joined for this hour by Brittany Bartoleben, she's the pastry chef at the Dahlia Bakery and the Dahlia Lounge. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And you're going to hang a whole hour.
A whole hour. It's more than just a corner today.
I know. Yeah. I know. Usually you've got the corner on the bakery, the bakery thing, but today you're not going to get away from talking bakery.
Oh, I should hope not, because I don't know what else to say about anything else.
I want to talk a little bit about the pear tart. Now, many of you out there probably never had our pear tart, but it's near and dear to my heart. It was one of the original dessert items, along with the coconut cream pie and the world-class creme caramel at the Dahlia Lounge when we opened 30 years ago.
Yes. Shelley, your original pastry chef, who we, Stacy and I, call our pastry camp counselor, she says she put it on the menu immediately. And it is really, really simple. It's puff dough, a little scoop of almond frangipane, which is almond paste, egg, and sugar. And it's topped with a pear that's been poached, meaning gently cooked in sugar syrup, vanilla syrup. But over the years, we've since added wine to that, of course. And then you bake it, and the puff dough rises around the pear, and it's simple and elegant, and you serve it with a nice dreamy caramel sauce, and it's delicious.
So so you've jumped way ahead.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, just back off for a second.
Back up.
So here's this dessert that's been on the menu. Well, it's not on it right now, but, but it was on for years
and years.
Well,
it is, but we'll get there.
And I guess I'm a little curious how these things become a thing. So when we first were writing the Seattle Kitchen book, we sent out an email, or actually it was at that time it was a newsletter saying, we're writing a book. What are the most requested recipes that you would like to see in our book? And we sent it to our customer base of about 20,000 people. And the number one recipe that came back was the coconut cream pie. But like number five was this pear tart.
Yes.
And I know there's probably not an answer to this, but as a baker, when you think about things that have become classics in your world, how does that happen? What is the criteria, do you suppose there is? Is there a magic in texture? Is there a magic in, I mean, everyone loves pears, everyone loves vanilla, or is this, you just, it's unpredictable.
I can give you,
it's like writing a hit song. Right.
Yeah. I can give you two answers to that. The first one is the more broad answer, is the simplicity of it. What I've learned in 20 plus years of being a baker, that the more bells and whistles I try to add to the dessert, the more I try to make it super creative, the less people attach to it. They may love it and think it's delicious, but it doesn't resonate with them. That pear tart, it's, you know, it's three ingredients, basically. And, I mean, it's frangipane, pear, and puff dough.
Right.
And it's just simple, and it's just people latch on to that. My most popular dessert on the menu this summer has been a brownie sundae. I mean, it's regardless of what other really interesting, cool things I'm doing, that's what people latch on to and are going to order again and again.
So a brownie sundae has got some chocolate, right? It's relatable.
It's ice cream.
Everyone knows what a sundae is, so it's familiar, right?
It's
so
familiar. And
But a pear tart, a poached pear tart in puff pastry with frangipane is not the same as a brownie sundae.
Sure, but it looks like a Danish, if you ask me. I mean, it's very relatable. It's there's not broken up pieces of cake. There's no foam. It's just straightforward and delicious. And part two of my answer is that almond frangipane.
Right. You, everyone loves that.
Everyone loves that. And you don't know it's there necessarily when you're presented with this. It's a brown square topped with a pear. But I have several friends who are servers at the Dahlia Lounge and have been for years. And what the customers keep saying is, what is that flavor?
Right.
And they don't really know what it is. Yes, it's almond, but it doesn't punch you in the face with that toasted almond flavor. There's something to that frangipane that people just really, really attach to. I think that makes the tart.
Okay, so frangipane really is a mixture of a couple of ingredients, right? Because it's a mixture of marzipan, right? And then it's got egg yolk and sugar. Is that it?
Yep, maybe a little pinch of salt.
Maybe a little pinch of salt.
Yeah, and it creates this paste. This sort of gooey paste, and we put it on everything. It is a workhorse recipe for us. I've talked about Bostock. I guess it's been a while, but that's a slice of day-old brioche that's been smeared with that almond frangipane and then put in the oven, sometimes with fruit. Our fruit crostata that is wildly popular at the Dahlia Bakery is a very similar version of that pear tart, except for rather than puff dough, it's all encased in a nice pie dough.
Okay.
So It's the 30th year of the Dahlia Lounge. And so we ran that pear tart as our New Year's Eve special. We're trying to bring it back in little ways. And this summer, of course, I'm not going to put a poached pear on that.
Right.
But that same tart is just begging for stone fruit.
Right. It's plums.
Plums. Yeah. Right now we're doing it with apricots and just serving it with an apricot caramel sauce. And, of course, Anna's Hyssop ice cream, mm-hmm. because can't get away from that. And what's great about stone fruits is you don't have to poach them ahead of time. They come with their own natural juiciness, whereas mm-hmm. if you were to put just a raw pear on there, it'll just kind of dry out. So, yeah, apricots, plums. I'm looking forward to trying it with figs. It's that tart is just a blank canvas for summer fruit.
So one of the cool things about the processing of that pear mm-hmm. is that if your pear isn't quite ripe, you simply poach it a little longer.
Yeah.
If it's super ripe, it might even only take 30 seconds to poach.
Yeah, I mean, just drop them in that water or that liquid.
And then the key is turn off the heat of that liquid and let the pears just kind of sit in it. Like, for example, if they're super ripe pears, I wouldn't even put it in. I'd just put it in the hot syrup and then just let them sit until it cools.
Right.
Right? So that you're not cooking the pear anymore, or at least not a lot.
Yeah.
But if it's an underripe pear, you have to kind of simmer it for a bit until it softens up.
Gently simmer. I always think of it as if you're poaching fish.
Right.
Treat it the same way with the same gentleness.
We are not putting pear butter on our tart.
No.
You don't want to overcook it.
No.
You don't want mush,
That would be very sad. Yeah.
And then caramel sauce. We have 30 seconds. A 30-second caramel sauce.
So you're going to take your sugar, and we usually mix it with a little water. Doesn't matter how much. Toast the consistency of quicksand. Put it on your stove. Keep brushing down the sides with a pastry brush that's been dipped in water to dissolve any crystals that form on the side of the pan. That will kill your caramel sauce. You don't have to go with a thermometer for this. Once it's caramel colored, what looks like a penny, then you're going to slowly add warm cream. Did everyone hear me with that? Don't add cold cream. It'll work, but it's going to sputter, and I've got burns on my arms that will last for the rest of my life because of that. So microwave your cream or heat it in a separate pot on the stove. Slowly add it. It's going to seize up a little bit. Don't worry. Keep it on the stove. Keep whisking. It will get smooth and dreamy and creamy. Mm-hmm.
And I like to finish off with a couple of tablespoons of whole butter, personally.
I like to finish off with a couple of tablespoons of alcohol. So,
in the caramel sauce or in you?
A little of both.
Okay. Brittany's going to stay with us for the whole hour. Next up, what's on the horizon? Figs, grapes, melons, transparent apples.
No.
All things coming up this summer on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas. Our audience is, most of them are finishing their sandwich. Apparently, we had a little mess up this morning, so we have some sandwiches still coming from W Bakery. I'm Tom Douglas. You are Brittany Bartolini.
I am, yes.
Chef at the, pastry chef at the Dahlia Bakery and the Dahlia Lounge, and joining me for this full hour. We're getting a bit of your sensibility about the summer crop coming up, and maybe how you'd use it both sweet and savory in the bakery.
Yeah.
I'll be curious about that. So let's go through some of the things that are really popping at our farm, Prosser Farm, right now. So tomatoes are big.
Yes, they are.
I was talking earlier before you got here about a puff pastry tomato tart with onions and fresh ricotta on top after it comes out of the oven, and fresh pesto kind of poured on top after it comes out of the oven. And how important it is not to overcook herbs, right?
Yes.
Let those be a finishing herb. Tomatoes. Where do we see those in pastry?
Well, you just said it, in puff pastry.
Uh-huh.
We do oven dried tomatoes for quiche. You obviously want to get rid of all of that water if you're going to put it in a quiche. So an oven dried tomato, you're just going to, we cut them open, and I hate to say it, but we ditched the seeds and all the jelly that's inside, and then put them on a rack.
You know, if you just take that and put it in a strainer, and the water comes out, and it makes a great martini, tomato water martini.
I've heard you talk about this tomato water martini. I need to try that. Somebody needs to put that on one of the cocktail menus, because I need that in my life. You just dry it really low and slow in an oven, and they get really, really nice and intensely flavored, and they're great in a baked good.
Can I ask this question?
Yes.
You know, I would say early in my career, maybe in the 80s, 90s, sun-dried tomatoes were like the thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, because they were so hot, they kind of fell out of fashion.
Yeah.
I still love
them. I still think they're good. What? It's not hip, but I think they're good. Yeah.
Why isn't it hip?
I don't know.
You
don't
take
ask
a great
me.
Tomato and you dehydrate it a little bit in the oven to intensify the greatness. What is not hip about
it? I know. Don't. It's like lava cakes. They're delicious. Souffle. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. Uh-huh. But for some reason, it's like, oh, that's an 80s thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't know food had...
It really does.
It really does.
Like pesto did for a moment. Yeah. Basil pesto had a moment, right?
Basil pesto. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's really similar in the dessert world, too. I mentioned earlier breaking up pieces of cake. And just you see trends that just seem kind of silly. But they come and go. And then things like sun-dried tomatoes that are delicious. And it's like scoffed.
Because I could see easily like a sun-dried tomato quick bread.
Yeah.
That you would toast, you know, put on a fresh ricotta or some sort of spreadable cheese.
Delicious.
It'd be delicious.
Yeah.
Spread some avocado on a sun-dried tomato quick bread.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Let's introduce a new avocado toast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. My figs aren't here yet. Are you seeing fresh figs?
I am. My sister has a one of the green fig trees, the ones that grow really big. I think those are called king figs.
Uh-huh.
And on Sunday, I picked for about 4 minutes and ended up with several pounds.
Really?
So they are ready.
They're ripe.
They are ripe, dripping with juice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we are starting to see them popping up from like Charlie's Produce as well. It's strange. I feel like I see this every year, but things are happening earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, it's already time to start working with our late summer fall harvest.
Yeah, I was driving back from Prosser and just truck after truck after truck of fresh carrots, onions, tons of apples, all sorts of stuff being picked at this moment.
This is the time of year that I really love, but it feels a little early and I'm kind of sad. I'm not quite ready.
I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Don't want to see the raspberries.
No, I'm not ready.
Okay, grapes. Above the chicken coop, we have this old grapevine. I think it's called Interlaken or Interlaken.
Uh-huh.
It's the type of the variety. They're a table grape. They're not a wine grape. They are so good.
Are they the dark purple ones?
They get dark purple.
Yeah.
Or they get mottled kind of bluish purple.
Yeah.
But they're not Concords, and they don't taste anything like a Concord grape.
Okay.
But they are just a great table grape. How can we bake with those, especially if they have seeds in them?
If they have seeds in them, I usually don't try to bake with them when they're whole intact. Mm. I always just make a sorbet. I think
so you'll crush them and...
Yes. I'll pluck them off the stem and then plop them in a big stock pot with a splash of water, just enough to sort of get it going and get it moving. Cook them down until they really release all their juice, and then I'll put them through a food mill.
Food mill.
And
that
gets rid of everything but the seeds. Uh-huh. And then from there, all you're going to do is add simple syrup to taste. Or not to taste, I'm sorry. Add simple syrup, and then you need to test the bricks.
You don't think they're sweet enough, huh? Or are you doing that for texture?
Doing it for texture.
Okay.
Yeah, they are sweet. I mean, it makes a lovely juice as well, but you need that for texture and a little citric acid as well.
And then you put it into your ice cream maker churn.
And churn, and that's what I'll be doing with the Concords I'll be getting, sort of planning ahead. You just have to know what you're going to do. And once those grapes come in, we can actually pluck them and then individually quick freeze them. And so we've got them ready.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a seedless grape, and there are some really delicious seedless grapes out there, there's something called a Tomcord. Just like you.
Thompson and a Concord?
Exactly. So it tastes like a Concord and it's seedless. So that's one that you could make. You could drop them in a clafoutie. We've done grape clafoutie. Mm-hmm. I need Terry here for this. Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful. A grape pie is actually a really, really delicious thing. And so I take half of my grapes and cook them on the stove with sugar and cornstarch. Mm. So I'm making sort of like a gel. And then at the end, I fold in fresh grapes so that they keep that big, juicy quality to them. And then there's your pie filling. And it's delicious.
Well, I don't know that I've ever had a seedless grape that would qualify or make me want to make a pie out of it. I just don't know that that's happened. Our neighbor, the Crawfords, have these transparent apples
now.
Have you heard about these?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Tell me about what these transparent apples are.
It's the first apple of the season. And so they're very, very pale. That's why they call them transparent. They're very pale green. They have a really sharp acidity, but they're tasty. They're really, really tasty. They look like a golden...
Apple tasty? Like, do they have a true apple flavor? Or are they more like the Asian apple that, to me, doesn't have a real kind of
It's
apple?
Not like an Asian apple.
No.
It's more like... It has almost the texture of a, I want to say a Golden Delicious, but when you think Golden Delicious, you think of mushy. And it's not. It's crisp. But they look like a Golden Delicious. Uh-huh. And they do have a good apple flavor, but it's not that sweet, honey crisp or like developed flavor. It's subtle. And then the what I really like is the brightness of them. They have a really, really nice bright acidity.
Which, like Granny Smith, lends itself to
yes,
pie.
Yes, but and Granny things. Smith is really intensely acidic and really, really tart. This one just sort of walks that line. It's a nice, gentle apple. So I like to make apple butters out of them. I think this year, because I'm really stocking up on that anise hyssop, I think I'm going to do a transparent apple crisp with anise hyssop ice cream, because I think those two flavors could pair very well together. So I just started hearing about them maybe 5 years ago, because with working with this company, I have more relationship with farmers than I ever did in my career. And so I'm introduced to these cool things that I never had the chance
to. Do you want me to make you jealous for a minute?
Sure.
So I was out at the farm, and Jackie was taking me through the crops. Mm-hmm. I'm more the tool guy. I do projects, but I'm not the farmer guy. And she took me out to the melon patch, to the Hannah's Choice. She had a spoon in her pocket.
Oh,
we sat, and you're not supposed to do this. You're supposed to always wash the melons. You never know who's been out there, blah, blah, blah. We cracked open a Hannah's Choice, sat down in the dirt, in the warm dirt, and just took a spoon and ate the Hannah's Choice. First one of the year, spectacularly ripe and hot. It was 93 degrees out there, and it was like a hot, juicy melon. And you know, I love a cold. I love that cold melon, but
nothing
this
beats
was
eating
almost
fruit.
life changing.
Yeah, nothing beats eating fruit off the vine, warm from the sun. I mean, that is
literally cracked open. Yep. We took the spoon and just wedged it open, and we did put the seeds into the dirt, but. The meat of the melon was unbelievable. I'm just thought I'd make you a little bit jealous.
My mouth is literally watering.
Yeah,
melons are tough because you don't really want to do anything to them. Yeah. But yeah, that's another sorbet.
I love cantaloupe sorbet.
Yeah, so good.
So good. But it has to be great, a great melon.
Yes.
All right. Up next, we've got another corner, the Baker's Corner on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show, and you're smack dab in the middle of it. We've got two segments left. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, and I'm joined by Chef Brittany Bartleben. We still have food for thought, tasty trivia after this segment. But right now, we're going to jump into Brown Betty.
Brown Betty.
And Buckles.
And Buckles and Cobblers and
cobblers.
Pan Dowdies. And
yeah.
We might have to turn this into a future subject. But.
What I'd like from you is kind of the rundown on all that style of dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's take a Brown Betty from scratch and build it right here on the show verbally.
Okay.
Okay, so you just said a bunch of them. A Brown Betty.
Brown Betty.
Which is a crumb topping.
Crumbs. Bread crumbs. Sweetened bread crumbs, typically.
Sweetened bread crumbs.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
fruit. Layered crumbs and fruit.
But what are the other options? What's the difference between a Brown Betty and a Buckle?
Okay, here we go. I imagine a Buckle is like a coffee cake, where you're taking a coffee cake dough and dropping it on fruit and baking it in.
Dropping it on fruit.
Right on fruit and baking it in the oven.
But there's no fruit in the dough that you're dropping it on. It's more.
No,
like
it's almost like a cross between a coffee cake and a cobbler.
Okay, so what's a cobbler then?
A cobbler is the same thing, only it's biscuit dough or like a shortcake dough.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And that's, again, on the fruit.
On the fruit.
Okay.
And there's several schools of thought on this. I've seen recipes for cobblers that, to me, aren't a cobbler. So don't at me with this one. So, like, but for me, it's always like a biscuit or a shortcake dropped on the fruit and baked in a casserole dish.
And then a crisp.
Same thing, baked in a casserole dish, except for it's a streusel.
So it's not a bread. There's no breadcrumb in it.
No breadcrumb.
So the difference between a Betty and a crisp is the breadcrumb.
Exactly.
Ah.
And a pan dowdy.
Sure I realize that. And a pan dowdy.
Since we're really going down this road, a pan dowdy is scraps of pie dough put on top of the fruit and then baked. And then toward the end of the baking process, you pull it out of the oven and squish that dough into the fruit and the juices and the dough. It all mingles and becomes all delightful.
Hmm. But you leave it cooked long enough on the top so it gets crunchy or crusty.
Oh, yeah. Is that all of them? I think that's
about it.
That's good enough.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Let's make a crisp together.
A crisp.
Because
okay.
I happen to have a Brown Betty.
A Brown Betty.
Sorry,
so this is the
promised.
Dessert that is sort of, it's personal for me.
Okay.
I grew up eating something called rhubarb dump. You've probably, if you're a fan of the show, you've heard me talk about this before. And what that is rhubarb, just cut up rhubarb. tossed with strawberry Jell-O mix, just the dry mix.
No way.
Yeah, I know. Just hear me out. And then you take cake mix, white cake mix. You don't mix it. You just take that powder and scatter it over that. Stay with me, folks.
Wait a second. So we have rhubarb, we have powdered strawberry Jell-O, and now we have cake mix.
Yep.
Dry. Everything dry.
Dry. And then you dot it with cubes of butter, pour a little water over it, and then you bake it. And it becomes bubbly and delightful, and it's very dear to my childhood memories.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I just got beat up on zucchini earlier.
Uh-huh.
Would somebody please go on our Facebook page and tell me if they think that Brittany Bartleben is crazed with that last recipe, please?
If they
because
stay
I'm
listening.
Because I'm tired of getting beat up.
Who's seen Steel Magnolias and heard Truby talk about cuppa, or a cup of cobbler? It's where you take a cup of flour, cup of sugar, cup of fruit cocktail, and bake it. Sounds disgusting. I did a little research years ago on what this is. It's actually, the traditional Southern recipe is cup of liquid of any kind, and it's sort of layered, and it becomes just super gooey and gross, uh-huh. But people love it. That's, to me, was what rhubarb dump was. So years ago, I was working for you. You were paying me to do this. Mm-hmm. I wanted to turn this into something made with whole natural ingredients. I wanted to match my childhood memories uh-huh. with something real. So I decided to make a white cake mix. And I took flour and sugar and real butter and just sort of slowly paddled that butter into that my dry ingredients until I had basically what mimicked what you see in the bag uh-huh. of cake mix. I then took it one step further. I've got a pile of my my white cake mix. I took that and then turned half of it into actual cake, baked it into a cake. I added egg whites and milk and all that. And then I crumbled it. And so I've got this powdery white cake that I layered with fruit. The other thing was this is you need your fruit to somehow have a juice. So rhubarb, for instance, we'd sugar it and let it sit overnight, and then we've got this rhubarb juice. For stone fruits, I'm cooking a little bit of sugar, adding the stone fruit to it, and turning it off, taking off the heat, and then juice leaches out. So where I'm going with this is I'm layering...
I can't wait.
I know. It's a long road. It's worth it. So I'm layering my fruit, some of my juice that I've got with that, with my powdery white cake mix. And then I top the whole thing with my cake crumbs. And then I put it in the oven. So those juices and that powdered white cake, they sort of bind together and they form this juicy, bubbly deliciousness paired with really nice acidic apricots, which turn more tangy when you bake them. And then the cake crumbs actually toast. So there's my toasted sweetened crumbs. So you've got this crispy layer on top of cake, and then the bottom layer is this beautiful, I can't even describe it as a coffee cake, but everything's just bound together and wonderful, and I don't know what's not to like about that, so.
I'm going to leave it at that.
Come to the Dahlia Bakery at the end of the week, or Dahlia Lounge, and have a stone fruit brown Betty topped with anise sip ice cream. I don't think he's convinced.
No, I am. I'm totally convinced. What is somebody going to do at home?
Try it. So
no, I'm talking about a regular brown Betty.
Yeah. Oh, you want to do a regular brown Betty? So just make some breadcrumbs.
I mean, you just spent a week making that one dessert.
I did, and it's so worth it. First of all, I'm going to tell you how to make my brown Betty. Cooks Illustrated has a white cake mix, or a white cake recipe, that is about as close to what I'm making that you can find. And so I would try that. Try that cake alone. It's delicious. But if you want to make it at home, a nice bread that is day old, not stale, just day old or dried a little bit. Brioche would be great, even just something that you can get a nice crumb out of, challah, and crumble that up and then mix it with a little bit of sugar. I mean, you can Google any brown Betty recipe, and I believe Martha Stewart has a pretty solid one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so. But that's boring. Have some fun with it. Make white cake.
You're out of your mind.
I know.
If you wanted to get crazy, you know, we have this segment when we start the show called Ordinary to Extraordinary. Mm-hmm. What would you do to make your brown Betty not the typical? I know you had that homemade version, which is different,
sure.
But can you use a flavored bread of sorts?
I mean,
would you use a pecan bread? Like, we have a pecan flaxseed, or is that too savory? Or
I don't think that's too savory at all. My thing is it's a little hard to get a nice fine crumb out of those rustic loaves like that. But you can, I would slice them and then dry them out in the oven, mm-hmm. and then you can get a nice crumble out of that. But yeah, any of our lovely Dahlia Bakery breads, Wendy makes that Yakora. It's like a pear roja or something. It's like a dried pear bread. That would be fantastic. You can add brown sugar instead of white sugar when you're sweetening your breadcrumbs. If you're doing an apple brown Betty, add a little bit of cider to your liquid, but then first reduce that cider. I love cider reduction. Mm-hmm. That stuff is liquid gold. Take like, you know, a quart of apple cider and reduce it down to a cup, and that will pump up any apple flavored dessert you're doing.
I'm doing a demo out at Microsoft, and I'm doing the rum apple pie.
Oh boy.
Which is in the Dahlia Bakery book.
That's a boozy one.
It's a boozy one, but what I like about this pie is so often I'm disappointed in apple pies because they're not cooked enough. I don't like a big pile. It's like, remember the old hippie days when the pies got really thick and big and they weren't necessarily cooked all the way through?
Well, what happens when you slice into that big hippie orb, you've got a big air gap between the top of the crust.
It immediately crumbles.
Yep.
And oftentimes the apple's not cooked. What I like about our recipe for the rum apple pie is that you make your kind of rum syrup and then you cook your apples into
That's right.
So they go in to the pie. You have to chill them off, but they go into the pie pretty much cooked.
Perfectly cooked.
Right.
Yeah.
So that when they do bake again, they get almost custardy.
Yeah.
And you get a, more like a, what I would say a texture of a peach pie where the fruit is creamy and delicious, and you just don't get apple pie like that ever.
Yeah, unless you come to the Dahlia Bakery around the holidays, obviously. Yeah. But,
so, yeah. But I think that's an interesting technique. Have you, you like that style?
I would never, apple pie? Yes, I do, and I would never make an apple pie without pre-cooking my apples first.
I don't think most people, do you guys do that in the audience? I don't think most people have ever made an apple pie where you make your filling first, unless maybe you buy a pre-made filling.
For years, I didn't, and I always wondered why I hated my apple pies. Like, why do my apple pies suck? And it's because I didn't pre-cook my apples.
You
can control the flavor and add more flavor to those apples when you're doing that, too. The
flavor being spices, you mean?
Spices, or you can brown your butter a little bit and saute your apples in
There's a trick nobody usually does.
Oh, God. Yeah, brown butter.
Whew, brown butter.
Delish. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's we've talked about this before with vegetables and quiche, taking that extra step to pre-cook them, and then you've got that opportunity to add more flavor. And
So two things are happening, right? You're dehydrating your vegetables so they don't water out your custard.
Yes.
And you can add the more flavor to them, and they get more intense.
Yeah.
When you roast a piece of broccoli, it's much more intense than when you haven't.
Yes, absolutely.
Caramelization is king. Yeah. Brown butter and caramelization, they go together.
They're really hot tips.
Now, I don't know
there.
If you noticed, but during the break, I made caramel sauce for these folks. I made it the bitter style, right? Because I couldn't undo that. What do you think? Would you go darker on your caramel, or do you like a little bit more golden? Like that? You like a little bit less? Because it does get bitter, and it almost tastes less sweet, right?
I am more forgiving of an overcooked caramel than of an undercooked caramel.
Yeah.
I think a pale caramel is sad.
All right, up next, it's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, right here. Audience got their sandwiches and now refuse to clap.
I heard
Tina, welcome back.
Thank you.
We have invited Mr. Jim Maurer from Bellevue back.
Yes, an audience member sitting right here at the Hot Stove Society hanging out with us now gets to come behind a microphone.
You know what happens if he loses?
Oh, he has to give up everything.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds to me like he's a pretty darn fine home cook that maybe might be bringing something to the show next time for a winner.
Yep. Before we go there, let me tell you a little bit how the game is played. All right. Each one of you will get five trivia questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least correct is obviously the loser. And that loser needs to give something away to an audience member or a fan of our show. Today, you guys will be playing for Emily Sakuma. She asked the question about the bibimbap. Earlier, I just like
you got
to
it. Nice job.
So, if you lose the quiz, you'll have to give her some wonderful thing that you love. Brittany, should you lose the quiz today? I doubt you will, but if you do, what would you give to Emily?
I'm going to give away dinner for two at the Dahlia Lounge because they will obviously save room for dessert.
But they won't have corn cake.
They won't have corn cake. That'll be gone by the time they get this. But yeah.
All right, delicious.
So that's $100 value?
Yes.
All right, $100 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery.
Jim, we realize
or Dahlia, you, Dahlia, Lounge.
Dahlia you may
Lounge.
Not own a restaurant, and you're actually just came to hang out with us. Jim, should you lose the quiz, would you like to give something away of Tom Douglas's? Because that's what I like to do. He has a lot of things.
I think Tom is very generous. Mm-hmm. I might go out on a limb here, but my friends and I have a little food club, and once a year we do a weekend out on Bainbridge Island in this nice old 1898 house. Maybe she would like to join us.
Emily, wow. If Jim loses, you are hanging out with him and his cooking club.
In Bellevue?
Bainbridge.
In Bainbridge.
Yeah, it's, we call ourselves the Four Guys and the Tomato.
I like it.
The tomato doesn't cook.
That sounds super fun. That's a nice gift.
All right.
Yep. And can Emily bring a friend?
Emily can bring a friend. This is a friend. Normally, we only cook by ourselves. We invite the spouses. Yes.
Good.
Fun. All right, Emily. Wow, she's listening like, oh, boy. All right, Tom, what would you like?
I will give a gift card to $100 gift card to any place in our company that they would like to go to.
Wow.
So that could be Palace Kitchen, Carlisle Room, where I had the veggie rainbow platter last night.
Yum.
Or it could be Brave Serious Horse Tavern, pie. Where I went for my second dinner last night, had fried chicken and burgers.
Dinner number two. Yeah. Well, I love that.
Make the rounds.
Make the rounds, yeah. So there's a reason I look the way I do.
All right.
I have a lot of restaurants.
All right. So no matter what, Emily is a winner today. Who would like to go first?
I will go first since I'm Terry Rotero today.
You are. All right, Miss Brittany. True or false? Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, and kohlrabi all come from the same plant.
I'm going to say true, the cruciferous family.
Wow, nicely done. You are correct.
Ooh, I don't know if we stand a chance today.
Yeah. That was great.
Cruciferous.
All right, question number two. What happens if you put a rotten egg in water?
It floats.
Yes. Good job.
Hey, I float.
noticing a connection there.
What does that say about you, Chef?
What does that make you? All right, question number three, Brittany. The word chimichanga translated literally means what in Spanish? You have some options. Is it thingamajig? Whatchamacallit or delicious?
Let's go with the first one.
Thingamajig?
Thingamajig.
You're correct.
Yay!
Thingamajig. Good job.
That is just not right.
Question number four. True or false? Fritos only have three ingredients.
That's true. No, I bet that's false, actually. I bet they all sorts of... Okay, Fritos? Those are the ones that are shaped like... You all are distracting me.
This is fun. This is getting fun over here.
Three ingredients in Fritos? Sure. Let's say true.
It's true.
All right.
Corn, oil, and salt. Four for four. Let's go.
I thought it was time out, but it was actually...
I wasn't sure what that was. It was a T for true.
Now I get it. Yeah.
All right. For a perfect score, Brittany, where was Hawaiian pizza invented? You have some options.
Okay.
China, Hawaii, Canada, or the U.S.?
I bet it was Canada.
Yeah,
I love
certainly
those
was.
Guys.
Wow, 5 for 5.
That's
very
a perfect
impressive.
Score by Brittany Bartoleven.
All
righty. Who's next?
I'll go next.
Okay, Jim. All right, your first question. Which type of pastry is boiled before it's baked?
A bagel.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice. One for Jim.
Okay.
All right, Jim, most oysters you eat are actually what? You have some options. Alive. Females. Males or sea burgers?
They're alive.
Yeah, I wrote this one. I wrote that one my very own self.
Sea burgers.
I don't know. Question number three. Graham crackers were invented to prevent what? You have some options. Allergies, sexual urges, heart disease, or polio?
I'm going to lose, but it's got to be the sexual urges.
You're correct. Yep.
Wasn't that by, like, the Graham company, Mr. Graham?
Mr. Graham, he had some problems.
Everyone straight.
Invented some crackers. Okay. Question number, let's just
I
move on.
I hope my wife isn't listening.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Let's just move on, Jim, shall we? All right. Question number four for you. What country produces the most melons? Is it Mexico, the United States, China, or Brazil?
Mexico.
The answer's China.
Wow.
Yeah, The audience is very disappointed in you, Jim. All right, your last question. What cut of fish is a whole side removed from the central vertebrae?
It's a fillet.
Correct. Good job. Jim had 4 correct answers.
Out of 5. Not bad. Tough crowd today.
Yeah.
I am shaken.
Yeah.
I think I'd like this young man to come up, Jim's friend. Let's come on. I need a teammate.
Tom's phoning a friend.
I'm phoning a friend. Jim is too tough. I'm going to pit brother against brother.
Oh, boy.
I like it. I like it.
All right. You know, I usually pay a $25 gift card to come help me out, to come cheat with me.
Okay, she's going to like
Frank?
Frank's nice. Food.
All right. So when you talk, you have to get right up to the mic, okay? Right.
Frank and Tom for the win. What cooking term describes the sad separation of a liquid from a cooked meringue or custard? Quote, sad.
I think it's broken. Mm. Or curdled.
Sad.
Sad. It's diabolical.
It's actually weeping.
Eerie. I was trying to give him a hint. What is it? Wouldn't look.
It's weeping.
Yeah. It's weeping is the answer. All right. What food industry has regulations concerning seasons, areas, quotas, size, gear, and permits?
It's either fishing or crabbing.
Fishing is the answer. Yeah. Job on that one. Question number 3. True or false? Mace and nutmeg come from the same tree.
True
is the answer. Good job. 2 correct and 1 incorrect. True or false? Mahi mahi is another word for dolphin. Is that true or false?
True.
The answer is false.
Uh-oh. We're in serious trouble.
You're in trouble. Your last question. Which of the following is not a type of Pacific salmon? Chinook, pink, coho, or reef?
Well, I don't even know of a salmon named reef. Yeah, so I'll say that.
You are correct. However, you are still the loser.
Thank you, Frank. Boy, I would have had it if it wasn't for Frank. Well, congratulations to
Emily Sakuma, who is the winner today.
She'll
for
receive
sure.
a $100 gift card to any of our joints. Frank gets $25 for cheating with me, and Jim gets to keep his $50 gift card to the gift shop for being a guest today on the show.
Everyone wins.
If you want to be part of the show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by the fabulous Tina at Large Media. That's LARJ Media. And our sound engineer are the Shawns. Don't call me the Shawns. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to HotStoveSociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. Comes with breakfast and hot coffee. And remember, if you missed any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can listen via Stitcher or iTunes or search for Seattle Kitchen on your favorite podcast. Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.